ACCA, the world's most forward-thinking professional accountancy body.
This podcast series covers everything you need to know about the pathway to membership and the skills you develop along the way. ACCA is about more than just exams. Join our discussions about EPSM, the practical experience requirement, and how the ACCA qualification can take your career in exciting directions.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this ACCA podcast. My name is Isabel Rofe, and I'm an education community manager here at ACCA. And today we're discussing how your studies help prepare you for the workplace. With me to explore this topic is a fantastic guest. He's an ACCA expert tutor, leadership coach, and TV anchor. Welcome, Ashim Kumar.
Thanks very much, Isabel. Great to be with you. I know we've been talking about this for a while, and I'm glad that it's finally come together.
Me too. So if we get into it, we know that the technical knowledge that you gain throughout your ACCA studies is obviously vital for a career in business and finance. Mm-hmm. But what about the other skills that you're developing at the same time without always realizing it? These are sometimes referred to as soft skills, but don't let that name fool you. Soft does not mean unimportant. These are essential skills that employers look for, and they can be transferred across professions. They increase your employability and they improve your ability to perform successfully in a role. Today, we'll look at some examples of these so-called soft skills, including time management, organization, and effective communication. And we'll explain how you are developing these crucial skills alongside technical knowledge as you progress through your studies. So now it's time to introduce my guest properly today. So hello, Ashim. Thank you again for joining us.
Pleasure.
I want to begin with a short introduction. Perhaps you can tell us a little bit about your background and your current role.
Absolutely. So I'll start off by saying I never wanted to be an accountant. In fact, for me, accountants, you know, wore black bowler hats and were boring as anything. I saw myself as some kind of international jet setter, solving business problems around the world. But things didn't work out that way, fortunately, actually. And I kind of came the long way around studying for the ACCA. The job that I applied for, was accepted for, required that I did some studying. And that was really a life-changing moment for me, because I used to sit in class and watch my tutors thinking, oh, my goodness, you know, I would love to do that job. I mean, it really struck me. So as soon as I qualified, I went back to that college and I started teaching business law, actually, believe it or not, but that was the only vacancy they had. And it was great. And the rest, as they say, is history. Since then, I have run two international training businesses, one Central Eastern Europe, Central Asia, and one in Middle East and North Africa, where I was executive director for the MENA region. So now, as well as my occasional training for external clients, I have my own online training program where I engage directly with students from around the world, and I find that most fulfilling. So that's where I am.
I think that's so interesting, because it sounds like it was a happy accident then that you fell into the roles that you've taken since. And it sounds like you've got quite a varied experience as well. So that's why I think you'll be really excellently placed to talk about today's subject. And as a tutor, especially, I'm sure you see firsthand the development of soft skills in your students. And it'll be great to hear your thoughts on how studying for exams helps students become well-rounded employees in the future. But let's start with the basics. Why are soft skills important?
Right. So, you know, I'm not sure I agree with the term soft skills, but it's a generally accepted term. So let's go with that. And basically what it's about is how one engages with others. And if you think about it, unless you live in a cave somewhere in a mountain where you never meet anyone else, you are engaging with people all the time. It might be live or it might be online, as we are. And things like the way we communicate, things like the way we engage with one another in terms of empathy, in terms of managing time, which is often called a soft skill, they help our connections with people, both in our professional and personal lives. And those of us who kind of don't recognize the importance of soft skills kind of poo-poo it and say, well, no, what's far more important is the technical stuff. But actually, it's not true. Robert Half is an international recruitment agency, and they spoke to their clients, and their clients listed 11 key things that they are looking for when they conduct an interview. And all 11 of those attributes were so-called soft skills. Not once were technical skills mentioned. So that's how critically important they are.
That's really interesting. And actually, I do agree with you. Soft skills seems like the wrong term for it. Perhaps we could call them professional skills or something similar. But
happy with that.
But as you say, they're so important. Would you say they are as important then as technical knowledge?
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And you know, yes, so far, I mean, the example I gave was with regard to being an employee, but they're equally important when running your own business, when leading teams and so on. I would say, yes, they are equally important. And perhaps for me personally, I think the soft skills might edge it a little bit, might be a little bit more important than technical. Why? Well, because with the technical skills, you can actually pick them up. You can build them. You know, you've been studying all your lives, you know, how to draw in knowledge and how to, you know, apply that knowledge and so on. With the soft skills, what tends to happen is that most people don't really recognize their importance, and therefore they don't develop them as much as they do the technical skills. And that's a bit of a shame, because, you know, you can have some people with some brilliant attributes, brilliant ideas, fantastic technically, but they can't get them across. Then the communication skills aren't very good. They don't build rapport with their teams. No one listens to them. All sorts of things can go wrong. And all of that brilliance is wasted. So to summarize, yes, I think soft skills are at least as important as technical skills, because without those soft skills, the technical skills don't manifest.
Yeah, so true. I was just thinking actually of an example that someone once spoke to me about. They were working in a university that trained doctors. Clearly, when you're training a doctor, you want them to have the technical knowledge about how the body works and so on. But you also need them to be able to explain the issues to the patients clearly and compassionately and so on. So there's such a huge importance on the technical knowledge, but also on the way that you can communicate it and work on it. I totally agree. I think there's a place for both. And that's why we wanted to talk about these professional skills in this kind of detail. So I did mention some examples of soft skills in my introduction, but let's take a closer look at some of these now. And let's begin with organizational and time management skills. How do studies support the development of these?
I'd just like to address something you've just said about going to see the doctor. You know, when we go and see a doctor, we expect as a professional that he or she will understand what's going on, will have some input into helping us overcome whatever challenge we're facing in our health. But the way in which the doctor delivers their information, guides us, informs us, and so on, is so critically important to us. Because if the doctor does it well, then we feel as though we're being cared for, right? We have more confidence, more trust in the doctor. In a similar way, it applies to accountants as well. You know, when an accountant is talking to a client and does it in a way which shows an understanding, which shows a willingness to communicate the key issues, a willingness to work with the client to solve challenges, to work together on them, then the way that the client feels, and feelings, emotions are critically important, of course, because they define us, then the client feels that they can trust the professional accountant, which is exactly what they should be doing. Now, in terms of other soft skills like organizational skills, time management skills, I've been teaching a long time, over 30 years, and I've been through the situation, obviously. I've been through the studying process while in a full-time job, and I've experienced it, as I'm sure most ACCA students have experienced it, and graduates. The need to balance all of those things, right? So your studies, your private tuition time, you know, when you're studying on your own, time with your family. Some accountants may even have friends, goodness knows. I mean, it's possible. And also free time, time to follow your hobbies. All of those, I mean, there's a lot on our plates. And what we find is, unless we actually become adept at saying, right, this is a limited amount of time, how am I going to divide it to get the maximum value from it. My CA exam preparation done and my learning all done, but not at any price. In other words, there's a balance there to be drawn. Social time, hobby time, and so on. Family time, critically important. So all of these skills are necessary during our study time. And we find that unless we hone them, unless we develop them, our success in the exam is limited. And then what tends to happen is that those skills become part of us and we take them into our professional lives after we qualify. And they're so fundamentally important.
So you lead me on nicely into the next question, which was whether or not you have examples of how those organisational and time management skills are transferable from that study context into the workplace.
Yeah, let's shift the picture a little bit, right? Imagine yourself leading a team in an organisation. Certainly all the things I've said so far in terms of prioritising your tasks and organising yourselves and managing your time, of course, they are now embedded in who you are. But there are other things as well. So the ability to delegate, the ability to communicate what it is that you want somebody in your team to do, right? So your communication skills are important. If you're a leader or a manager where you're managing people, then you need to be able to influence those people. And there are all kinds of elements to influence. One of those is the ability to listen deeply as to what the other person is saying and to understand how their direction, if you like, matches the direction for your team that you have chosen to take. So all of these are requirements, essential requirements for accountants in business, or any professional actually in business. Now, I'll give you a very small example, but I think it illustrates the point. Currently, as I said earlier, I'm an online SBL tutor. So what do I need to do? Well, I need to delegate all my social media posting and managing and looking at the stats and producing reports on how that's going, administration, so the tax issues and so on, marking activities for students, I delegate that because obviously I can't do all of these things on my own. So I need to focus on what I am good at, which is teaching and engaging with students to guide them and delegating the rest. Now, all of these parties to whom I delegate these activities, they don't teach SBL, they're not teachers themselves. So it's on me to explain to them very clearly and simply what it is that I need. And that's actually more difficult than it sounds. They're all very proficient in what they do, but the ability to communicate clearly what it is that you do and how to find that common ground is critically important. Also, when I speak to my students, and you know, as I've already said, you know, I'll talk to them about the way they organize themselves and their time discipline and so on, I need to demonstrate soft skills like empathy and communication skills, the ability to listen again and to connect with the individual on a one-to-one basis, because everyone's situation is different. So now I've just given you a very, very tiny example of the need for embedding soft skills into your professional lives. And this is tiny. I mean, you know, you can multiply it X times if you're talking about a larger team and a bigger organization and so on.
Absolutely. I think that's a really good example. And I was thinking whilst you were speaking about time management and organization in particular, and how my experience of studying has helped me in my current role, because when you're working towards an exam, for example, sometimes it feels like you haven't got enough time to prepare and you have to really prioritize tasks. You're essentially working towards a set schedule. You're working to deadline. And I think it's a really good way of preparing you for the workplace, where sometimes you don't have that much control over when a deadline is set. Sometimes you have to get a task done urgently. And I think as much as you would sit there saying, oh, I wish I had another week to work on this, sometimes that's not the case.
No.
So if you just take that example of preparing for an exam, it's all about understanding what you can achieve in the amount of time you have and working out how you do it. So that kind of moves us on nicely to some other skills that I wanted to talk about. One being problem solving, and that also links to resilience and adaptability, because these are really important skills throughout any learning journey, because plans change and many students suffer setbacks. For example, during their studies, they may not pass the exams in the order or in the speed at which they wanted to. So how can that kind of experience be of benefit in the long term?
This is critical, you know, and it's an experience that you'll find all around you that people really need to get better at dealing with. And I'll start with resilience. And by this, I mean the ability to fail at something and pick yourself up again without giving up, right? Because if you don't do that, then what happens is you, by definition, you don't move forward. And once you've done that, then what one needs to do is say, okay, well, look, this didn't work, right? What is it that I need to do better? Now, here's the problem solving, right? What is it that I need to do better to make it work next time? And that is when you start to create solutions for yourself. And to do that, one needs to look at, you know, how we live on a day-to-day basis, how we think. And sometimes that's difficult because we need to question ourselves and admit that actually we're not perfect. You know, we've got to change a couple of things that, you know, the amount of time we spend, I don't know, on Facebook, for example, we need to edit that a little bit and prioritize and all of those. So from resilience comes the need to question oneself, the need to recognize that changes need to be made, committing to those changes, and based on those, solve the problems that stood in our way. Now, this is not easy to do. It is certainly not easy to do. But, you know, everyone that's on the ACTA journey and anyone that's trying to achieve anything, even in their personal lives, need to be able to do this. And they need to be strong with themselves, you know, and realize that once they have solved that particular problem, they are that much further along in their personal and professional journeys.
Absolutely. I mean, I can say from personal experience that as horrible as it is to make a mistake at work, it definitely helps you avoid making similar or bigger mistakes in the future. And it's just a real learning opportunity. And it's taken me a while to see that, but now I definitely can see, looking back in my career, how being adaptable and solving problems as and when they arise has really helped me grow in my roles.
So Isabel, you know as well as I do, it's not easy, is it? It's not easy to accept that, you know, there are some things that we're not doing perfectly well or the way we should be doing it, and taking responsibility for that. It's not easy, but that is really the way forward, in my opinion.
It's true. I think when I look back now, I can look back with satisfaction knowing how much I've grown. But at the time, it's definitely something that you have to get used to. Sitting with the uneasy feeling that something's gone wrong. It's something we have to get used to as time goes
on. Absolutely. But it's worth it, right?
It is. So we have talked about communication skills and how vital they are for success in different roles and professions. Let's have a quick look now at how studying and sitting exams can help improve a student's communication skills, because I think they are just so vital and they keep on coming up again and again in our discussion today.
You know, I'm so happy that we're talking about communication skills in the exam, because it is something that keeps coming up for me as well, you know, in my conversations with students. And there are so many mental blocks that students have when it comes to communicating their answers in the examination. For example, number one, well, English is not my first language. I'm worried about making grammatical errors. Number two, what happens if I don't think of the right words? Number three, students labor under the misconception that they're there to impress the marker with all kinds of flowery language and lots of context for the points that they're making. Now, that might be important to, you know, in academia, but not so much with ACTA examinations, and certainly not at the strategic professional stage. It really needs to be much more focused. So there are all kinds of areas around communication that students kind of get worried about. So my advice to students is actually very simple, okay? And that is, when you write your answers in the examinations, keep your sentences short. long meandering sentences lose the reader. Now, remember, the marker, right? The marker has to understand what you're saying. And if you try and, you know, give him 5,000 words in one sentence, then the marker's not going to be able to make sense of what you're saying and won't give you the credit that you deserve. So if you keep your sentences short, the marker understands what you're saying. It's nice and easy because you're using simple words. And in each sentence, you are saying something. You're making a constructive point that is relevant to the task. It's not a bit of background. It's not a bit of context. You're answering the question. And, you know, this is actually links to a very common refrain of the SBL examiner's feedback. You know, you look at any feedback report after any sitting and you see the same thing. And the examiner's saying, well, you know, I wish students would answer the question, right? So your answers need to be very focused and they need to be very simple and straightforward to read. Also things like layout, right? So with SBL, I always recommend that students make a point using a structure which I call state, explain, apply. And those students who have watched some of my videos will know what that means. But after each point, I strongly recommend leaving a gap before making the next point. So when the marker looks at it, it doesn't look like, you know, an endless sea of words, which the marker then has to separate and mark. So, you know, simple but effective. Other things include tone. And this is something that the examiner, again, has pointed out, and all the introductory material on SBL says, well, look, you know, you are being placed or you're expected to behave in the way that you would in the real world. So if you're a consultant advising the board of directors, what kind of tone would you use, right? And that's really important because that's a demonstration of professionalism. In the real world, you know, we wouldn't abbreviate our words or use yay instead of yes. We'd make our point, but diplomatically and firmly. But things like that, tone is important. And finally, I would reassure students for whom English is not their first language that the ACCA has always said, and it's not just for SBL, it's across the board, really. The ACCA has always said that so long as the meaning of your point is clear, you will be given credit. In other words, you won't be penalized for grammatical errors. And I think that combination of things, Isabel, kind of puts students' minds at ease, and then they can focus on improving their communication skills in that way. And that's critical if they're going to optimize their marks.
Thank you for that. I think that's really good advice. And actually, if you think about it, it's kind of win-win, because by keeping your answers simple and to the point, you're making it easier for yourself and the marker. We're coming to the end of the discussion, but I wanted to just touch on something that I know that you have a lot of experience in, which is leadership. And ACCA students are required to complete the Ethics and Professional Skills, or EPSM, module. This improves their chances of exam success, but it also boosts employability because students gain various professional skills such as accountability, strategic thinking, and commercial awareness. And the module uses business simulations to help students build leadership skills. And I know as a leadership coach, you'll have some really good insights into the skills that are needed to thrive in a leadership role. So can you identify other areas of the student journey other than EPSM that support this kind of career goal? Because I know for a lot of people, they hope one day to find themselves in leadership roles.
Yes, absolutely. One thing that I talk about with a new group of students is that the ACCA qualification is designed for people who are going to end up, if they're not already there, in a leadership role. So the thinking about the qualification, and especially the thinking about the examinations at strategic professional stage, have to bear that in mind. So how do you learn about that kind of leadership thinking in your strategic professional preparation stage? Well, for example, we know that with SBL, we have a pre-seen case study. Then we're given some tasks. We have some exhibits. You know, the CFO has received this or has read this article in the local newspaper, and the CFO has asked you to produce something to present to the board about the implications of this article. I'm making it up. Okay, making it up. Now, as a leader, as a manager, as a professional, it's not just the words of the task, but things that you need to think about are things like, okay, well, look, what is the article saying? What does this mean for the organization, for its leadership, for its stakeholders, for the CFO's role and responsibility in the criticisms contained in the article? So it's much, much more than just the words of the task, which say, produce a briefing paper. You've got to think more deeply. Another small example are things like planning your activity under resource constraints. Now, this is, you know, this is something that we do as leaders, right? And we've got limited resources, and within those, we have to leverage those to achieve certain goals, targets, objectives, and so, you know, what have you. And we're doing exactly the same thing when we plan our answers in the examination, because our limited resource, our constraint is time. And what we want to do is to use our time in a way that maximizes the returns that we get. And in the examination, those returns are marks, right? So again, it's about thinking about this balance between the resource constraint and your objective, and then finding the activity or activities that will get you to your objectives with the limitations that you face.
That's a really, really useful insight. Thank you. It is almost time to let you go. Before you do you have any final thoughts for students?
Yes, I do actually, because I have been, you know, ever since we had this initial chat, I have been thinking about what it is that I really want to kind of get across as much as possible. And really, it's a reminder to students that, you know, becoming a qualified professional, a member of our professional body, is a challenging journey. It certainly is. And then there will be difficulties, right? There will. But as we've already said, we are going to get up and we're going to keep going. Why? Well, because the reward is waiting for us at the end of the day. And by reward, I don't just mean, you know, the financial reward or the prestige, if you like, but the feeling of self-satisfaction that one has done it. So don't allow yourself to give up. And also, please remember that you're not on this journey alone. Okay, you have thousands of tutors around the world who are experts who are more than happy to help you. But also the ACCA has enormous amounts of resources to help you. So if you look on the Study Hub, and if you haven't already done so, I suggest that should be a regular stop for ACCA students. Enormous number of webinars, other materials that you can use to make your journey easier. Okay, so that's it. Don't give up and use the resources that are available. You're not alone. Good luck.
That's a perfect place to end. And a big thank you again for joining us today. I think you've done such a good job of explaining just how many skills students are gaining throughout the journey to qualification, even if it's not always obvious when they're busy studying and revising for that next exam. Maybe next time you need a motivational boost, just try and remember how much you're learning as you progress and think of all of the exciting places this knowledge may take you in the future. And on that note, thank you for everyone listening. Thank you for joining, Ashim.
Thank you very much for inviting me along. It's a great pleasure to be with you.
Take care, everyone.
You can listen to our ACCA podcast covering exams, study advice, achieving ACCA membership, and much more wherever you found this podcast.
ACCA, the world's most forward-thinking professional accountancy body.